Have you ever had an experience where it feels like people are watching you, waiting for you to make a mistake so that they can point it out? I think we've all kind of experienced that before at one time or another. I grew up in a family. There's three of us kids. I had two older sisters. You know, I was the youngest. And especially my relationship with like my middle sister, you know, she was 5 years older than me. And, you know, when we were kids, like we just, I don't know, for lack of better terms, I think we hated each other. Not really, but like you might think so, the way we acted towards one another. I mean, we fought all the time. And because of that, like, if like for me as a kid, it always felt like, man, she's just waiting like for me to like make a mistake so she can like tell my parents. You know, it's like I had to be careful around her. Now, hopefully she's not listening to me this morning over the internet, because I don't think I ever did anything like that to her. Isn't it great when a story is one-sided? I was the good son. I've with my own kids, like I watch this play out in front of me like all the time. It reminds me when I was a little kid and I'm like, don't do that. Don't just like look for your brother or sister to make mistakes. You can point it out. Don't be a snitch, you know? Don't want you to do that. Or you know, maybe, you know, you struggle with a feeling of like people's expectations upon your life. You know, maybe it's family members or friends or people at work, and they have a specific expectation of how you're going to act, the things that you're going to say, how you're going to spend your time. I mean, it's the weight of expectation upon you, and sometimes you struggle with that, and you want to live your life differently. You want to live your life how you want to, but you feel the weight of expectations. If I were to be totally honest with you, like it's interesting, as a pastor, I feel that. You know, I'm a regular person like you, even though I stand up here and I talk every week and I lead a church. But at times, like I feel the weight of people's expectations, different people, you know, within the church or in the community or whatever it is, of how they expect me to act, how they expect me to live my life, how they expect me to lead the church, what the church should look like. I mean, all sorts of things. And dealing with those weight of expectations, but at the same time, living out my life and doing what I feel God has called me to do. And sometimes that's hard balancing those two things. When I was looking at this passage we're going to look at today, you know, we're looking at the life of Jesus, and each one of those things I just talked about, Jesus really dealt with those things. He lived a very human life. You know, when Jesus wandered around ministering to the crowds, there was people in the crowds always. When you read the stories, they were there, and they were just waiting to like pounce on him. Waiting for him to make any kind of like little mistake that they thought he was going to make, so they could just like point it out, so they could get him into trouble. Can you imagine? I mean, he's a public speaker. I feel what he's going through. You know, as a public speaker, I got to be careful of things that come out of my mouth. I know that I'm very accountable. Jesus was speaking to thousands of people. And you know, in general, like when I speak in front of you guys, I don't feel like there's people in the crowd waiting for me to say the wrong thing so they can point it out. But people were really, they were in the crowd waiting for that with Jesus. And they had expectations upon him in terms of how he should minister, what he should be teaching the people, how he should be living, and how he should be getting his disciples to live. I mean, there was all these expectations, but he had to do what he knew he was called to do. He had to do what his heavenly Father had called him to do. And so we're going to dive into the story here in Mark chapter 2 as we continue to go through this book of Mark that Mark wrote about the life of Jesus. What we're going to be speaking about today, this topic, it might seem a little bit confusing to you. There's a lot there in terms of context, but I'm going to hope that I can wade through it with you this morning. So let's read together. It says, "Once when John's disciples and the Pharisees were fasting, Some people came to Jesus and asked, "Why don't your disciples fast like John's disciples and the Pharisees do?" Let me just pause right there. Don't you love it when you get compared to other people? We struggle with that. We play the comparison game, right? Sometimes that comparison game happens in our own mind, right? We compare ourselves to other people. Sometimes the worst is when people come alongside of us and compare us to other people. And now this is what's happening to Jesus. Why aren't you like the Pharisees? Why aren't you like the other religious leaders, Jesus? And John, you know, your buddy John, who like, you know, he baptized you and like pointed out that you were like the Lamb of God, the Son of God who came away. Even he's more spiritual than you, Jesus, because like he fasts twice a week. What's wrong with you? Let's continue. Jesus replied, "Do wedding guests fast while celebrating with the groom? Of course not. They can't fast while the groom is with them. But someday the groom will be taken away from them and then they will fast. Besides, who would patch old clothing with new cloth? For the new patch would shrink and rip away from the old cloth, leaving an even bigger tear than before. And no one puts new wine into old wineskins, for the wine would burst the wineskins, and the wine and the skins would both be lost. New wine calls for new wineskins." You can feel the weight of expectation that whoever's asking Jesus this question has upon him. And Jesus, interesting, he comes up with three different illustrations to try to explain to them why he's different. He comes up with three different explanations as to why he's not fasting. So this word comes up, fasting, and they're like, "Jesus, why are you not fasting?" You know, within our culture, people fast for different reasons. It's basically it's this aspect of refraining from food for a specific period of time. You know, if you're a Muslim, you know, during the month of Ramadan, you would refrain from both water and food. You know, if you've ever spent time, you know, with Muslims during the month of Ramadan, it's interesting because from sun up to sundown, they're not supposed to eat any food, which isn't too bad. But when Ramadan falls in the middle of summer and you add on it that they're not supposed to drink any water. So from sunup to sundown, the middle of like the blazing heat of summer, they're not even drinking any water. That's when it gets really, really brutal. In fact, the rules are so harsh that like they're not even supposed to like swallow their own spit, because that would be considered drinking. But we fast for different reasons, and we need to understand the concept of, or the context of, what's happening here. So they're coming to Jesus and they have these expectations of fasting for Jesus. But typically fasting from an Old Testament perspective or pre-Jesus perspective, it was a spiritual discipline of voluntarily refraining from food from a period of time, sometimes hours, usually days. When they wouldn't eat anything. In fact, there's a story of Jesus where he fasted for 40 days. Didn't eat a thing. You know, when we look at the Old Testament, there was only actually one time in the Bible where they were commanded to fast. Only one time of the year they were commanded to fast. And it was the Day of Atonement. It was the time of year where the priest would bring a sacrifice into the temple. And it was for the entire nation of Israel. They would bring the sacrifice, and it was for the sins of everybody. And it was during this day that the nation of Israel was supposed to fast. It was the only commanded fast for the people of Israel. But there was also voluntary fasting. Fasting in the Old Testament, it expressed mourning. If they were going through a time of mourning over the death of somebody or something that was incredibly sad for them, they would fast. Oftentimes it was an urgent seeking of God in distressing circumstances. Something was going on in their life that was incredibly distressing. They would reach out to God in fasting and prayer. And we read different stories in the Bible of this. We read about King David. And he's had a child with Bathsheba, and this child is dying, and David is distressed, and he calls out to God in prayer and fasting, where he wouldn't eat a thing, calling out to God to save the life of this child. Read the story in Esther while the people of Israel, they're living in Babylon. They were taken away as captives. The Persians were now in control. And through a series of circumstances, the people of Israel were going to experience genocide, ethnic cleansing. Everybody who is a Hebrew, ethnically Hebrew, was going to be killed. And so the whole nation of Israel fasted and they prayed. It was an extremely important time for them. We read the story of Jonah, this Old Testament prophet who was sent by God to the nation of Assyria. Because the nation of Assyria, they were so wicked. They were so sinful. They were doing things that were hurting so many people. God sent Jonah over them and say, man, you got to tell them to stop. Or else judgment is going to come in their lives. So here's this Jewish prophet going up to the capital city of Assyria, Nineveh. And he preaches to thousands of people, not expecting anything to happen. And lo and behold, this nation accepts what is being said, and they go through a time of mourning and repentance. And during this time, they fasted, hoping that God would relent, that this destruction wouldn't come upon them because of their wickedness. So we see different stories like that. But over time, the religious leaders, the Pharisees, had taken some of these ways of these spiritual disciplines. They'd added new rules and new laws and new expectations. By the time Jesus shows up, the average person fasted twice a week. If you were someone who was devout, you were fasting twice a week. It wasn't something that was commanded in the Bible, but it was something that was expected. And even John the Baptist was fasting twice a week. And so Jesus comes on the scene. These expectations, these religious expectations, are being placed upon Jesus. And he uses three metaphors to try and to explain to them. The first one is a wedding. He's like, hey, when you're at a wedding and people are there, the guests are there, and they're with the bridegroom, are they fasting? No, they're celebrating. They're celebrating with them. You know, in this period of time, a lot of Jewish rabbis would teach the people, you know, during a wedding, if there's some sort of religious obligation that's happening during the wedding, you know, put off that religious obligation. The wedding and the celebration is way more important. And their weddings were like way different than ours. They didn't like celebrate for just like 5 hours or a day. Their wedding celebrations would go on for like a week, maybe more. It was one big party. And Jesus is like, man, when that wedding celebration is going on, are people fasting? No, they're celebrating with the groom. They're celebrating with the groom. This is a fascinating metaphor that Jesus is referring to here. He's referring to himself as the groom. He's referring to his relationship with them as he's the groom and they are the wedding guests. And he's referring to something that the people of Israel would understand very well, in the fact that like God would oftentimes refer to his relationship with the people of Israel as he is the bridegroom and they are the bride. He is the bridegroom, they are the bride. And that's how he would relate to them. He's like, that's how our relationship should be. That's how close and intimate God's desire was with the people of Israel. He's like, I want to be so close and I want to be so intimate with you. It's like a groom and it's bride. And Jesus shows up on the scene and he's like, hey, I'm not doing what you're expecting me to do. It's like this. I am the groom and we're having a party because a wedding is about to happen. There's something new. There's going to be a new covenant, a new promise. When people get married, they promise one another or they covenant with each other. There's going to be a new covenant. There's going to be a new promise on the scene. The people of Israel understood the promise or the covenant that was made through the patriarch Abraham and Moses. And that is what they understood. Jesus shows up on the scene and he's like, there's a new promise coming. There's a whole new covenant that's coming. And I've showed up on the scene. I'm the bridegroom. And you guys are my guests. And you guys are watching this happen. You guys are watching this celebration happen. And while this is happening, all bets are off. We're just going to party and we're going to have a good time together. And then he goes into this second metaphor of an old garment. He's like, you know, it's kind of like this new promise that I'm bringing you, this new construct that you've never seen before. It's kind of like an old garment and it has a tear in it, has a hole in it, has a rip in it. And he's like, when you take that old garment, you know, it's been washed several times. It's been dried several times. That fabric has already been pre-shrunk. It's not getting any smaller. He's like, you don't take a new piece of cloth that hasn't been washed, that hasn't been shrunk, and you don't sew it onto that old garment because you know exactly what's going to happen, don't you? When you wash that garment, that new piece is going to shrink and it's going to tear away from the old garment and it's going to make the hole that was there even worse. It's going to make it even worse. Jesus came to introduce something totally new, radically different from what they understood in the past. He's like, this old promise that you guys, this old way of relating to God is that old garment. And God is bringing something new. And you can't take that something new and just combine it with the old. It's just not going to work. It's going to tear apart. It's going to be destroyed. He said, in fact, it's kind of like this. You don't take new wine and put it into old wine skins. Now we, in 21st century, we put wine into bottles, right? They didn't have glass bottles back then, but they would oftentimes put it into wine skins, which was a container made of usually goat leather, goat skin, or lamb skin. It held the wine the best. And what they would do is they'd put the wine into those containers, into those wine skins. And as that wine fermented, it would expand. And as it would expand, it would cause the wine skin to expand as well with the wine. And the wine skin would get bigger. But that wineskin, as it got older, it would stop expanding. It could only expand so far. Maybe it would get old and it would get a little bit brittle and it would be cracked. And he's like, you guys know just as well as I that you don't put that new wine in that old wineskin. Why? Because that new wine's going to ferment and it's going to expand as well. And what's going to happen? That old wineskin won't be able to handle it. It's going to break apart and it's going to ruin the wineskin. It's going to ruin the wine. Jesus shows up on the scene. It's like, man, you guys are throwing all your old expectations upon me. You're trying to put your expectations, your religious expectations, but you're also putting these old covenant ideas on me. And he's like, I'm coming here and I'm bringing you something so brand new, it's going to blow your socks off. I'm bringing in new wine and you're going to try and put it into these old wineskins that you guys understand and it's just going to be destroyed. He's like, you cannot mix the two. In my time of being in the church, one of the things that I've recognized at times is we try and take the old covenant, we try and take the Old Testament and the way that God interacted with the people of Israel at that time, and we take the New Testament, the way Jesus interacted, and sometimes we try and mesh the two together. We try and take the Old Testament expectations, we take the New Testament, we try and put it together, and it just doesn't work well. Jesus showing up on the scene, he's like, you can't do this. What I'm going to bring is so different. It's so different. You cannot put the two together. It's a brand new paradigm. Jesus came to introduce something new, not to patch up the old. The salvation that Jesus brought was so different. It was so unlike that day of atonement. When Jesus showed up, he was the final sacrifice. There's no need for a day of atonement, no need to mourn. When the day of atonement came along, that once a year time where they would bring that sacrifice for the sin of all the people, what would they do? They would mourn and they would fast. When Jesus came and he brought his celebration of death, when he came and he sacrificed himself on the cross, it's not a day of mourning and fasting. It's a time of celebration when we truly understand what Jesus has done for us. I think of an acorn. Have you ever seen an acorn? When you look at it, it's this beautiful little nut with like a shell. And it's like, man, that's cute. You could make decorations out of it and do all sorts of stuff with it. But ultimately, what that acorn is supposed to do, you're supposed to dig a hole and you put it in the ground. And eventually what ends up happening is this ginormous tree grows out of it. This beautiful tree. And when I think of what Jesus is trying to explain here, I think of that acorn and that tree. You know, when you place that acorn in the ground, you know what happens? As that tree grows up, that acorn is destroyed and it disappears. But what you have left is something so much more beautiful than what was left behind. Jesus is like, this old covenant, it was a beautiful thing. Jesus didn't have anything against fasting. In fact, he's like, people are going to fast, but now is not the time. That old covenant was a beautiful thing, but it needs to go on the ground and it needs to die because something much more beautiful is going to come up. The writer of Hebrews says this in chapter 8, verse 13. It says, when God speaks of a new covenant, it means he has made the first one obsolete. It's now out of date and will soon disappear. The writer of Hebrews fully understood what Jesus was trying to teach with the old wine, with the new wine and the old wineskins. It's like that acorn. He's like, that acorn's going into the ground. And it's going to be destroyed, but something so much more beautiful is going to come out. And that old covenant is going to soon disappear. It becomes obsolete. All right, let's continue here. I got one more passage that connects onto that we're going to go through. It's verse 23 to 28. And it says, one day as Jesus was walking through some grain fields, his disciples began to break off heads of grain to eat. But the Pharisees said to Jesus, look, why are they breaking the law by harvesting grain on the Sabbath? Jesus said to them, haven't you read in the scriptures what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He went to the house of God during the days when Abiathar was high priest and broke the law by eating the sacred loaves of bread that only the priests are allowed to eat. He also gave some to his companions. Then Jesus said to them, the Sabbath was made to meet the needs of the people and not people to meet the requirements of the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even over the Sabbath. So what is the Sabbath? The Sabbath was this last day of the week. You had 7 days in the week, and the Sabbath was the very last day of the week, what we'd consider to be Saturday. And God gives this command to the people of Israel. It was nothing like anything any other nation was doing at that time. Every other nation, they would work 7 days a week. But God comes in the lives of the nation of Israel and he says, no, I want you guys to be different. Part of my promise with you, part of my covenant with you is I want you guys to rest. You guys need rest. It's not good for you guys to work 7 days a week. I want you guys to have rest. And so to make sure that you guys are getting the rest that you need, I'm going to give you a command. Man, on that seventh day, don't do any work. Don't do any work. God wasn't trying to throw like a really harsh command upon them. He's like, man, I care about you guys. I worry about you guys. You guys aren't meant to just like work 7 days a week. So take this rest. By the time Jesus shows up on the scene, though, what the religious leaders had done with it was so far different, I think, than what God originally intended. If you look in the Old Testament, that command of obeying the Sabbath and resting, there's really only about four different like things that God pointed out to make sure that they did that. 4 different ways to make sure they didn't work. But by the time Jesus shows up on the scene, the religious leaders had expanded that to like 39 things that you couldn't do on the Sabbath. And so, you know, Jesus and disciples, they're just walking through the grain fields, you know, enjoying God's nature, enjoying the sun. They're walking through these grain fields and they're hungry, and they start, you know, as they're walking through, they're picking off the heads of grain and munching on the kernels. And there they are. There's the religious leaders. Whoa, look what you're doing. You're eating a little bit of, you're picking off those heads of grain. Oh, you're working on the Sabbath, Jesus. You're breaking the rules. Because, I mean, it takes a lot of energy, right, to like pick off that head of grain. You're working, Jesus. You're breaking the rules. And Jesus says to them, he says, remember David? Remember that story of David? He was on the run. He was on the run from Saul with his band of misfit followers. And they come upon this place of religious observance where there are these priests and there's this showbread that are there, you know, within the temple, within the tabernacle. Only the priests are supposed to be eating. It's for them. And David is there with his followers, and they haven't eaten anything all day. And they end up taking this bread that's really only meant for the priests. They end up breaking the rules and eating the bread. She's like, remember that story? The point of it is that it's not about obeying the rules. It's about the fact that, like, it's about people. It's about taking care of people. It was more important that David and his followers actually ate something than it was for them to obey this specific rule that the bread was only for the priests. Hey, you guys, this idea of Sabbath isn't so that you can throw a whole bunch of like religious rules upon people. It's there to protect people so that they just get some rest. So don't make it more than what it is. Human need is greater than religious ritual. That's what Jesus is saying. Human need is greater than religious ritual. So get over your religious rituals, guys. God's heart was never to create rules for the sake of rules, but he gave them guidelines because he's like, this is what's best for you. And sometimes those old guidelines just don't quite fit anymore. And sometimes those guidelines that God gives, you guys are like making into something that it was never meant to be. So stop doing that. So stop doing that. These are interesting stories. You know, we read this and we don't totally relate to it anymore. You know, the whole idea of Sabbath, it's like we don't have those like really strict rules on the Sabbath anymore. But there's principles that apply in terms of rest. That idea of fasting, we don't have these crazy strict rules of fasting. But there are some things that we can apply in regards to this story today. Let's look at a couple takeaways. Number one, what traditions do we have that put our preferences before the needs of the people? I think when we read this story, I think that's one of the things that we can grab out of this. They had all sorts of traditions that they had placed upon the commands of God within the old covenant or the old promise of the Old Testament. Jesus came along and he totally blew that construct away and he brought in a new promise. But on top of that, they had all these traditions. You know, God has things that he wants for us, that he expects for us. Those things are typically very simple. God cares about us. He loves us. And it comes down to loving him and loving others. But how that looks can look really different from place to place. And sometimes we come up with our traditions and we come up with our ways of doing things, whether it's like in the church, you know, if you're a church person here today, sometimes we come up with our own ways of doing things within church. And it's just our own culture. It's our own way of doing things, especially in the Western world. It's our preferences. It's the way things that we like. Maybe it's just the way we grew up in church. And it feels special to us because that's the way we grew up. And it becomes so special to us that we revere it. And God comes along and he says, it's okay. It's okay to have those traditions, but don't put it in front of people. Don't put it in front of people's needs. Maybe the people's needs have changed. And those old traditions, those old ways of doing things, just don't work anymore. It's just not meeting the needs of the people. And I think Jesus would say, it's okay to put those old traditions to death. If it's not meeting the needs of the people. It's about loving God and loving people, right? And that can change from place to place. It can change from time to time. Maybe it's even within our own household, where we have traditions and ways of doing things within our own house. And sometimes we put that in front of the needs of our children, in front of the needs of our neighbors, in front of the needs of our friends. And God would come along and he'd say through his Spirit, reevaluate that stuff. Are you doing it for the right reasons? Are you doing it? Does it meet the needs of the people? Are you loving people through the way you do things? Number two, this is the other takeaway that I'd propose to you today. Number two, I would ask you, what old are we trying to mix with the new in our lives? What old habits or ways of doing things are we trying to mix with the new God wants to do in our lives? Jesus talked about this new wine and old wineskins. And I believe in the life of the believer, if we can see this metaphor of new wine, where Jesus wants to pour out his Spirit into us. He wants to pour out his new wine into us. And sometimes the new things that God wants to do in our lives, we want to mix it with the old, our old habits and our old ways of doing things. It's kind of like that old wineskin. We want to mix the old with the new. And I think that God would say to us, man, I don't want to just pour new wine into you, but I want to give you a whole new wineskin. I want to give you a new way of receiving the Spirit of God. I don't, you know, we can come into church and say, God, pour out your Spirit upon me. And we seek after a new way of experiencing God. And maybe God would say to us, man, I want to pour out my Spirit into you. But man, your wineskin is just way too old. It's way too cracked and broken. I want you to experience God in a new way, but man, I need to change you first. I need to change your wineskin. This heart, if we can talk about it in terms of our heart, God would say, man, that's an old wineskin. I want to give you a new, and it's not about you doing something, it's about me doing it in you. And I think that God would ask us, would you allow me in to give you a new wineskin for you to experience me in a new way? God, would you change my heart? Not me, because I can't change me. I can't change me. You know, we can do all sorts of stuff to try and change ourselves. Sometimes, I don't know, if you're like me, most of the time you fall short. I'm not really good at that. But when we invite God into our lives and say, God, would you change my heart so I can receive you in a new way, so I can experience you in a new way. You can pour out your new wine into me.